kidding. I'm the first to appreciate good lawyers. I had some brilliant ones.
And you needed them?
Yes, he answered. He knew that would trigger even more questions, but he continued on, nodding toward the ocean. I love walking the beach at night.
Why?
It's different than it is during the day, especially when the moon is out. I like the mystery of thinking that anything could be out there swimming just beneath the surface.
That's a scary thought.
That's why we're here and not out there. She smiled at his words, surprisingly at ease as they meandered down the beach. Neither of them felt the need to speak. Colin focused on the sensation of his feet sinking into the sand and the warm breeze on his face. Watching Maria's hair ripple in the wind, he realized that he was enjoying the walk more than he'd anticipated. He reminded himself that they were strangers, but for some reason, it didn't quite feel that way.
I have a question, but I don't know if it's too personal, she finally said.
Go ahead, he replied, already knowing what was coming.
You said you were a problem adult, and that you got in a lot of bar fights, and that you had some great lawyers?
Yes.
Was that because you were arrested?
He adjusted his cap.
Yes. More than once?
A number of times, he admitted. For a while there, I was pretty much on a first-name basis with any number of cops in Raleigh and Wilmington.
Were you ever convicted?
A few times, he said.
And you went to prison?
No. I probably spent a total of a year in county lockup. Not all at once, more like a month here, 2 months there. I never made it as far as prison. I would have. The last fight was pretty bad. But I caught a serious break, and here I am. She lowered her chin slightly, no doubt questioning her decision to walk with him.
When you say you caught a serious break...
He took a few steps before answering. I've been on probation for the last 3 years, with 2 more to go. It's part of a 5-year deal I received. Basically, if I don't get into any more trouble for the next 2 years, they'll clear my record entirely. Which means I'll be able to teach in the classroom, and that's important to me. People don't want felons teaching their children. On the other hand, if I mess up, the deal goes out the window and I go straight to prison.
How is that possible, to completely clear your record?
I was diagnosed with an anger disorder and PTSD, which affected my mens rea. You know what that is, right?
In other words, you're saying you couldn't help it, she said.
He shrugged. Not me. That's what my psychiatrist said, and fortunately I had the records to prove it. I'd been in therapy for almost 15 years. I've been on medication periodically, and as part of my deal, I had to spend a few months at a psychiatric hospital in Arizona that specialized in anger disorders.
And when you got back to Raleigh, your parents kicked you out of the house?
Yes, he said. But all that together, the fight and potential prison sentence, the deal, my time at the hospital, and suddenly being forced to be on my own, led me to do some serious soul-searching, and I realized that I was tired of the life I'd been living. I was tired of being me. I didn't want to be the guy who was known for stomping on someone's head after they were already on the ground. I wanted to be known as a friend, a guy you could count on, or at the very least, a guy with some kind of future ahead of him. So I stopped partying and I channeled all my energy into training and going to school and working instead.
Just like that?
Well, it wasn't quite as easy as it sounds, but yeah, just like that.
People don't usually change.
I didn't have a choice.
Still.
Don't get the wrong idea. I'm not trying to make excuses for what I did. Regardless of what the doctor said about whether or not I could actually control my behavior, I knew I was messed up, and I didn't give a damn about getting better. Instead, I smoked pot and drank and trashed my parents' house and wrecked cars and got arrested over and over for fighting. For a long time, I just didn't care about anything other than partying the way I wanted to.
And now you care?
I care a lot, and I don't have any intention of going back to my old life. He felt her eyes on him and sensed her trying to reconcile the past he'd described with the man before her.
I can understand the anger disorder, but PTSD?
Yes.
What happened?
Do you really want to hear this? It's kind of a long story.
When she nodded, he went on. Like I told you, I was a bit of a problem child, and by the time I was 11, I was pretty much uncontrollable. In the end, my parents shipped me off to military school, and the first one I attended was just a bad place. There was this weird Lord of the Flies mentality among the upperclassmen, especially when someone new arrived. At first, it was little things, typical hazing kind of stuff, like taking my milk or dessert in the cafeteria, or making me shine their shoes or make their beds while another guy went over and trashed my room, which I'd have to clean before inspection. No big deal. Every newbie goes through that kind of stuff. But some of these guys were different, just sadistic. They'd whip me with wet towels after I showered, or they'd sneak up behind me while I was studying and throw a blanket over me and just start beating the crap out of me. After a while, they started to do that at night when I was sleeping. Back then, I was kind of small for my age, and I made the mistake of crying a lot, which only amped them up even more. It's like I became their special project. They'd come for me two or three nights a week, always with the blanket, always with the punches, just beating the crap out of me, while telling me that I'd be dead before the year was up. I was pretty freaked out, on edge all the time. I would try to stay awake and flinch at the slightest noise, but it's not like I could avoid sleeping. They'd bide their time and wait until I was out. That kind of crap went on for months. I still have nightmares about it.
Did you tell anyone?
Of course I did. I told everyone I could. I told the commander, my teachers, the counselor, even my parents. None of them believed me. They kept telling me to stop lying and whining and just toughen up.
That's awful.
No question. I was just a little kid, but after a while I figured I had to get out of there, or they'd take it too far one day, so I ended up taking matters into my own hands. I smuggled in some spray paint and went to town in the administration building. I ended up getting kicked out, which was exactly what I wanted. He drew a long breath. Anyway, they ended up closing the school a couple of years later, after the local paper did an expose on the place. A kid died there, a little kid my age. I wasn't one of the students mentioned in the expose, but it was national news for a while. Criminal and civil charges, the whole works. Some people ended up going to prison over it. And my parents felt terrible after that because they hadn't believed me. I think that's why they put up with me for so long after I graduated, because they still felt guilty.
So, after you were expelled?
I went to another military school and swore to myself that I'd never let myself get beaten up again. In the future, I'd be the one throwing the first punch. So, I learned to fight. I studied it, practiced it. And after that, if someone ever grabbed me, I'd just lose it. It was like I was a little kid again. I got expelled over and over, barely made it through, and after I graduated, it sort of snowballed from there. Like I said, I used to be pretty messed up. He took a few steps in silence. Anyway, all that came into play during the court proceedings.
How do you get along with your parents right now?
Like my sisters, it's a work in progress. Right now, they have a restraining order against me. A stunned expression crossed her face, and he went on. I was arguing with my parents the night before I went to Arizona, and I ended up pinning my dad against the wall. I wasn't going to hurt him, and I kept telling them that. I just wanted them to listen to me. But it scared the hell out of my parents. They didn't press charges, or I wouldn't be here, but they did get a court order that prohibits me from being at their house. They don't necessarily enforce it now, but it's still in place, probably to keep me from ever thinking about moving back in. She studied him.
I still don't understand how you can just change. I mean, what if you get angry again?
I still get angry. Everyone does. But I've learned different ways to cope with it, like not going to bars or doing drugs. And I never have more than a couple beers when I'm with my friends. And being really physical every day, training hard, pushing myself, helps keep my moods in check. I also learned a lot of helpful things at the hospital, different ways to cope. The whole experience ended up being one of the better things I've ever done.
What did you learn there?
Deep breathing, walking away, letting thoughts bounce off, or trying to accurately name the emotion when it strikes in the hopes of diminishing its power. It's not easy, but it becomes a habit after a while. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of conscious thought, but if I wasn't doing all of these things, I'd probably have to go back on lithium, and I hate that crap. It's a good drug for a lot of people and it works, but I just didn't feel like myself when I used to take it. It was like part of me wasn't quite alive, and I was always starving no matter how much I ate. I ended up gaining weight, getting fat. I'd rather train a few hours a day, do yoga, meditate, and avoid places where I might get into trouble. Is it working? So far, he answered. I just take it one day at a time. As they walked farther down the beach, the music gradually faded beneath the sound of waves rolling up the shore. Beyond the dunes, businesses had given way to houses, lights glowing through the windows. The moon had risen higher, bathing the world in an ethereal glow. Ghost crabs scuttled from one spot to the next, scurrying at their slow approach.
You're very open about all of this, Maria observed.
I'm just answering your questions.
Aren't you worried what I might think?
Not really.
You don't care what other people think about you.
To a certain extent, I do. Everyone does. But if you're going to make a judgment about me, then you need to know who I really am, not just the part I decide to tell you. I'd rather be honest about all of it and let you make the call as to whether you want to keep talking to me or not.
Have you always been like this?
She peered up at him with genuine curiosity. What do you mean?
Honest? About everything?
No, he said. That came about after I got back from the hospital, along with all the other changes I decided to make in my life.
How do people react to it?
Most don't know what to make of it, especially at first. Evan still doesn't, and I don't think you do, either. But it's still important to me to be truthful, especially with friends or someone I think I might see again.
Is that why you told me? Because you think you might see me again?
Yes, he answered. For a few seconds, she wasn't sure what to make of that.
You're an interesting man, Colin, she said.
It's been an interesting life, he admitted. But you're interesting, too.
Trust me, compared to you, I'm the furthest thing from interesting.
Maybe. Maybe not, but you haven't run away yet.
I still might. You're kind of scary.
No, I'm not.
For a girl like me, believe me, you're a little scary. This is probably the first time I've ever spent an evening with a guy who talks about stomping on people's heads in bar fights or pinning his father against a wall.
Or has been arrested or went to a psychiatric facility.
Those things too.
And? She brushed at a few wind-blown strands of hair.
I'm still deciding. Right now, I have no idea what to think about everything you've said. But if I suddenly take off running, don't try to catch me, okay?
Fair enough.
Did you tell any of this to Serena?
No, he said. Unlike you, she didn't ask.
But would you have?
Probably.
Of course you would.
How about we talk about you instead? Would that make you feel better? She cracked a wry smile.
There's not much to tell. I told you a little about my family. You know I grew up here and went to UNC and Duke Law School, and that I work as a lawyer. My past isn't quite as colorful as yours.
That's a good thing, he said. Somehow, already on the same wavelength, they turned simultaneously and started back.
Okay, she said, and when he laughed, she stopped for a moment, suddenly wincing.
Reaching for his arm to steady herself, she lifted one foot from the sand.
Give me a second here, my sandals are killing me.
He watched as she slipped them off. When she finally let go of his arm, he felt the lingering afterglow of her touch.
Better, she said. Thanks.
They began walking again, more slowly this time. On the roof at Krabby Pete's, the crowd was growing, and he suspected that other bars were filling up as well. Above them, most of the stars had been washed away by moonlight. In the easy silence, he found himself admiring her features. Her cheekbones and her full lips, the sweep of her lashes against her flawless skin. You're very quiet, he observed.
I'm just trying to digest everything you told me. It's a lot.
No question, he agreed.
I will say that you're different.
In what way?
Before I took a job here, I was an assistant district attorney in Charlotte.
No kidding.
A little over 3 years. It was my first job after I passed the bar.
So you were more used to prosecuting guys like me than dating them? She half nodded in agreement, but went on.
It's more than that. Most people pick and choose the way they tell their stories. There's always a positive bias involved, and they frame the stories that way, but you, you're so objective, it's almost like you're describing someone else.
Sometimes it feels that way to me, too.
I don't know if I could do that.
Frowning, she went on.
Actually, I don't know if I want to do that, at least to the extent that you do.
You sound like Evan, he smiled. How did you like working in the DA's office?
In the beginning, it was all right. And the whole thing was a great learning experience, but after a while I realized it wasn't what I thought it would be.
Like taking a walk with me?
Kind of, she said. When I was in law school, I thought that being in a courtroom would be more like the stuff you watch on TV. I mean, I knew it would be different, but I wasn't prepared for just how different it actually was. To me, it seemed like I was going after the same person with the same background over and over. The DA would take the higher profile cases, but the suspects I dealt with were like walking cliches. They were usually poor and unemployed with limited education, and drugs and alcohol were usually involved. And it was just relentless. There were so many cases. I used to dread coming in on Monday mornings because I knew what would be waiting for me on my desk. The sheer volume put me in the position of having to prioritize the cases and continually negotiate plea bargains. We all know that murder and attempted murder or crimes with guns are serious, but how do you prioritize the rest of it? Is a guy who steals a car worse than a guy who broke into someone's house and stole jewelry? And how do either of those compare to a secretary who embezzles from her company? But there's only so much room on the court docket. There's only so much space available in prison. Even when the rare case did go to trial, it's not what you know happened, it's what you can prove beyond a reasonable doubt, and that's where it gets even trickier. The public believes we have unlimited resources to prosecute with advanced forensic capabilities and expert witnesses at the ready, but that's just not the way it is. Matching DNA can take months, unless it's a high-profile crime. Witnesses are notoriously inconsistent, evidence is ambiguous, and again, there are just too many cases. Even if I wanted to really delve into a particular crime, I'd have to neglect all those other files waiting on my desk. So more often than not, the pragmatic thing was to simply work something out with opposing counsel, where the subject pled to a lesser offense.
She kicked at the sand, her footsteps dragging.
I was constantly being put into situations where people expected results that I couldn't deliver, and I'd end up being the bad guy. In their minds, the suspects had committed a crime and they should be held accountable, which to the victims almost always meant prison time or a restitution of some sort, but that just wasn't possible. Afterwards, the arresting officers weren't happy, the victims weren't happy, and I felt like I was letting them down. And in a way, I was. Eventually, I realized that I was just a cog in the wheel of this giant, broken machine.
She slowed, pulling her sweater tighter around her.
There's just evil out there. You wouldn't believe the cases that would reach our office. A mom prostituting her 6-year-old daughter to buy drugs, or a man raping a 90-year-old woman. It's enough to make you lose faith in humanity. And because there's this great burden on you to go hard after the really horrible suspects, that means that other perpetrators don't get the punishment they deserve and end up back on the streets. And sometimes,
she shook her head.
Anyway, by the end of my time there, I was barely sleeping, and I started getting these weird panic attacks when I was at work. I walked in one morning and just knew I couldn't do it anymore. So I went to my boss's office and resigned. I didn't even have another job lined up.
Sounds to me like your job was draining in a lot of different ways.
It was.
She smiled grimly, a spectrum of conflicting emotions playing across her face. And?
And what?
Want to talk about it?
Talk about what?
The real reason you quit. The part that led to you having panic attacks? Startled, she turned toward him.
How would you know about that?
I don't, he said. But if you'd been there for a while, something specific must have happened. Something bad. And I'm guessing it concerned a case, right? She stopped walking, turning to face the water. The moonlit shadows accentuated her expression. A mixture of sadness and guilt that brought with it a fleeting ache he hadn't expected.
You're very intuitive.
She closed her eyes, holding them that way for a moment.
I can't believe I'm about to tell you this.
Colin said nothing. By then, they'd almost reached the spot where they had entered the beach, a cacophony of music audible now above the sound of the waves. She gestured toward the dune.
Do you mind if we sit?
Not at all. Slipping off her purse and setting her sandals aside, she lowered herself to the sand. Colin made himself comfortable beside her.
Cassie Manning,
Maria offered.
That was her name. I hardly ever talk about her. It's not something that I like reliving.
Her voice was tight and controlled.
The case came to me maybe 3 or 4 months after I'd begun working at the DA's office. On paper, it struck me as a fairly typical case. Cassie is dating a guy, and they get into an argument, it escalates, and the guy ends up getting violent. Cassie ends up in the hospital with a black eye and a split lip, bruising, a cracked cheekbone. In other words, it wasn't just one punch. It was a beating. His name was Gerald Laws.
Laws?
I've tried to find the irony, but I've never found any. And nothing about the case ended up being typical in the slightest. It turns out that they'd been dating for 6 months or so, and in the beginning of the relationship, Cassie found Laws utterly charming. He listened well, opened doors for her, a gentleman. But after a while, she began to notice aspects of his personality that concerned her. The longer they dated, the more jealous and possessive he started to become. Cassie told me that he began to get angry if she didn't answer immediately when he called her. He started showing up at her office when she was getting off work. She was a nurse at a pediatric office. And once, when she was having lunch with her brother, she spotted Laws on the other side of the restaurant, all by himself, just watching her. She knew that he'd followed her there and had bothered her. The next time he called, Cassie told him that she wanted to take a break for a while. He agreed, but soon thereafter she realized that he was stalking her. She'd see him at the post office or when she was leaving the doctor's office or when she was jogging, and she'd get these calls where no one would talk on the other end. Then, one night, Laws showed up at her door saying that he wanted to apologize, and against her better judgment, she let him in. Once inside, he tried to convince her to go out with him again. When she said no, he grabbed her arm and she began to fight back, and she ended up hitting him with a vase. After that, he threw her to the floor and just went at it. It happened that there was a police officer the next street over, and after the 911 call came in, the neighbors had heard screaming. He was at the house in minutes. Laws had her pinned to the floor and was punching her, and there was blood everywhere. It turned out later that it was his blood from a cut over his ear where she'd hit him with the vase. The officer had to use a taser on him. When they searched his car, they found duct tape, rope, a couple of knives, and videotaping equipment. Scary stuff. When I talked to Cassie, she told me that the guy was crazy and that she was afraid for her life. Her family was too. Her mom and dad and her younger brother were adamant that Laws be put away for as long as possible.
She burrowed her toes in the sand.
I thought so too. In my mind, there was no question that the guy needed to be put away. It was also pretty open and shut as far as cases go. In North Carolina, Laws could have been charged with either a Class C felony, which means he had the intent to kill her, or a Class E felony, where he didn't have the intent to kill her. The family, especially the father, wanted him to be charged with a Class C felony, which could have put him behind bars for anywhere between 3 and 7 years. The arresting officer, too, believed that Laws was dangerous. But, unfortunately, the district attorney didn't think we could prove intent since there was no proof that any of the things in the car had anything to do with her. Nor were her injuries truly life-threatening. Cassie also had a bit of a credibility problem. While most of what she'd said Laws had done in the past was true, she also said he'd done things that he clearly hadn't. Then there was Laws. He looked like Mr. Rogers, worked as a loan officer at a bank, and had no criminal record. He would have been a prosecutor's nightmare on the stand. So we ended up allowing Laws to plead guilty to misdemeanor assault with a year in prison, and that's where I went wrong. Because Laws was extremely dangerous.
She paused, willing herself to keep telling the story.
Laws ended up serving 9 months, since he'd already served 3 months pending trial. He wrote Cassie letters every other day, apologizing for his actions and begging for another chance. She never answered them. After a while, she didn't even open them, but she saved them all because she was still afraid of him. Afterwards, when we examined them more closely, we noticed the shift in tone over time. Laws was becoming more and more angry that she wouldn't respond. Had she actually read them and brought them to the DA? She stared toward the sand. As soon as he got out, Laws showed up at her door. She slammed the door on him and called the police. She had a restraining order filed against him, and when the police talked to him, he promised that he wouldn't go anywhere near her again. All that did was make him more careful. He sent her flowers anonymously. Her cat was poisoned. She'd find bouquets of dead roses on her doorstep. Even her tires were slashed.
Maria swallowed, visibly shaken. When she continued, her voice was hoarse.
And then, one night, while Cassie was heading to her boyfriend's place, by then she was dating someone else, Laws was waiting for her. Her boyfriend saw Laws grab her right off the sidewalk and force her into the car, and he wasn't able to stop it. 2 days later, the police found Cassie's body in an old lakefront cabin the bank had foreclosed on. Laws tied her up and beat her extensively, set the cabin on fire, and then shot himself. But they couldn't tell whether she'd been alive when the fire...
She closed her eyes.
They had to be identified through dental records.
Knowing that she was reliving the past and trying to work through it, Colin remained quiet.
I went to her funeral, she said, finally going on. I know I probably shouldn't have, but I felt like I needed to go. I came in after it started and sat in the back row. The church was full, but I could still see the family. The mom couldn't stop crying. She was almost hysterical, and the father and the brother were just white. I was sick to my stomach, and I wanted the whole thing to be over, but it wasn't.
She turned toward him.
It destroyed the family. I mean, all of them were a little strange, but it turned into a catastrophe. A few months after the murder, Cassie's mom committed suicide. Then the father had his medical license suspended. I always thought that there was something a little weird about the brother. Anyway, that's when these terrible notes started to arrive. They came to my apartment and the office in different envelopes, usually just a sentence or two. They were awful. Calling me names, demanding to know why I hated Cassie or why I wanted to hurt the family. The police talked to the brother and the note stopped. For a while, anyway. But when they started arriving again, they were different. More threatening, way scarier. So the police talked to him again, and I guess he just snapped. Denied that he was responsible and insisted that I was out to get him. That the police were in cahoots with me. He ended up in a psychiatric hospital. Meanwhile, the father's threatening to sue me. The police theorized that Cassie's boyfriend might be responsible for the notes. Of course, when the police talked to him, he denied sending them too. That's when the panic attack started. I had the sense that whoever was sending those notes would never leave me alone, and that's when I knew I had to go home.
Colin said nothing. He knew there was nothing he could say that would make her view the events she had just described in a different light.
I should have listened to the family and the officer.
Colin stared out at the waves, their rhythm ceaseless and soothing. When he didn't respond, she turned toward him.
Don't you think?
He chose his words carefully. It's hard to answer that question.
What do you mean?
By the way you said it, it's clear that you already think the answer is yes. But if I agree with you, you'll probably feel worse. If I say no, you'll dismiss my answer because you've already decided that the answer should be yes. She opened her mouth to protest, then closed it.
I'm not even sure what to say to that,
she offered. You don't have to say anything. She sighed, resting her chin on her knees.
I should have lobbied the DA and insisted that we charge Laws with a felony.
Maybe. But even if you had, and even if Laws was in prison longer, the outcome might still have been the same. He was fixated on her. And, if you're curious, if I'd been in your shoes, I probably would have done the same thing.
I know, but have you talked to anyone about this? Like a therapist? No?
He nodded. Okay.
You're not going to tell me that I should?
I don't give advice, he said.
Ever?
He shook his head. Then again, you don't need my advice. If you think therapy might help you, try it out. If you don't think so, don't. I can only say that in my own experience, it's been beneficial. Maria was quiet, and he couldn't tell whether she liked his answer.
Thanks, she finally said.
For what?
For listening, she said, and not trying to give advice.
Colin nodded, studying the horizon. More stars were evident now, and Venus glowed in the southern sky, bright and constant. A handful of people had wandered to the beach, their laughter carrying into the night air. Sitting beside Maria, it seemed like he'd known her far longer than the hour or so they'd spent together. He felt a distinct stab of regret that the evening was about to end. But he could sense it coming in the way she suddenly sat straighter. He watched as she drew a long breath before finally glancing toward the boardwalk.
I should probably get going, she said.
Me too, he agreed, trying to hide his reluctance. I still have to make it to the gym tonight. They rose from their spot and he watched as she brushed off the sand before slipping her sandals back on. They started back toward the dunes bordering the commercial strip, the music growing louder with every step. By the time they left the sand and were back on solid ground, the sidewalks were thronged, the crowds already enjoying their Saturday night. He stayed at her side, weaving between pedestrians until they reached the street, where things were quieter. Surprising him, she stayed close, their shoulders occasionally brushing. The sensation of her touch continued to linger. "What are your plans for tomorrow?" he finally asked.
"On Sundays, I always have brunch with my parents. After that, I'll probably go paddleboarding."
"Yeah?"
"It's fun. Have you ever done it?"
"No," he said. "I've always wanted to try, but I just haven't gotten around to it yet."
"Too busy doing real workouts?"
"Too lazy," he admitted. She smiled.
"How about you? Are you working?"
"No," he said. "I'll run, do some yard work, change the alternator on my car. It's still not starting right."
"Maybe it's the battery."
"Don't you think I would have checked that first?"
"I don't know. Would you?"
He heard the teasing in her tone.
"So after the manly yard and car work, what's on the rest of your agenda?"
"I'll hit the gym. There's a class that meets on Sunday mornings, and I'll probably do some sparring and groundwork, hit the bags, things like that. A guy named Todd Daly runs the gym, and he tends to work us pretty hard. He's a retired UFC fighter, coaches like a drill sergeant."
"But if you had to, you could probably take him, right?"
"Daly? Not a chance."
She liked the fact that he admitted it. "And after that?"
"Nothing, really. I'll probably do some studying."
By then, they'd turned onto another street, around the corner from Krabby Pete's. He recognized her car up ahead from the night he'd changed her tire, and when they finally reached it, neither seemed to know what to say. Instead, he felt her eyes zeroing in on him, almost like she was really seeing him for the first time. "Thanks for walking me to my car."
"Thanks for the walk on the beach."
She lifted her chin slightly. "I have another question."
"Okay."
"Were you serious about wanting to try paddleboarding?"
"Yes."
She lowered her lashes, slipping him a sidelong glance. "Would you like to join me tomorrow?"
"Yes," he said, feeling a dart of unexpected pleasure.
"I'd like that.
What time?"
"How about 2 o'clock? And we'll check out Masonboro Island. It's kind of hard to get to, but it's worth it."
"Sounds great. Where should we meet?"
"The parking isn't ideal. The only way to get there is to head down Wrightsville Beach, right to the very end of the island. Just park on the street. Bring some quarters, because you'll have to feed the meter, but I'll meet you there."
"Can I rent a board somewhere?"
"You don't have to. I have 2 of them. You can use my beginner board."
"Great."
"It's hot pink, though, with stickers and bunnies and flowers on it."
"Really?"
She giggled. "I was kidding." Then, "I had a strangely good time tonight."
"Me too," he said, meaning it. "And I'm looking forward to tomorrow."
After she unlocked the car, he opened the door, watching as she slid in. A moment later, she was backing out and then pulling away as Colin stood in place. It might have ended there, but she suddenly stopped the car and rolled down the window, leaning out. Hey, Colin, she called out.
Yeah?
When you're in your sparring class tomorrow morning, try not to get hit in the face.
He smiled, watching as her car sailed up the boulevard, wondering what he was getting himself into. He hadn't expected her invitation, and as he made his way back to his Camaro, he replayed the evening, trying to figure it out. Whatever her reason, he couldn't deny the fact that he'd been pleased. He wanted to see her again. No question about it. Chapter 6. Maria.
I knew you'd like him, Serena crowed. Was I right, or what?
It was Sunday morning, and as usual, Maria was with her sister on the back porch while their mom was finishing up breakfast. Their father was walking Copo, who was fluffed and clean with a pink bow near her ear.
I didn't say I liked him, Maria answered. I said he was interesting. But you also said you're meeting him today in your bikini. I'm not going to be wearing my bikini while I'm paddleboarding. Why not? Because I'm not you, okay? It would make me uncomfortable. Well, you better show some skin because, believe me, you're going to want him to take his shirt off. The whole sneaking a peek thing needs to work both ways. I don't want him to get the wrong idea. You're right. You should probably wear some baggy sweats or something like that. And no matter how you're dressed, I'm just glad you're finally going on a date. Don't try to make this into something that it isn't. It's not a date. We're just going paddleboarding.
Uh-huh,
Serena nodded.
Whatever you say. I don't even know why I try to talk to you about these things. You talk to me because you know I'll tell you the truth, which is why, of course, the two of you hit it off so well, because Colin is just like me.
Yes, of course, you're right. I'm essentially going out with my younger sister.
Don't blame me. I'm not the one who followed him out to the pier.
I didn't follow him out to the pier, Serena giggled.
You're so touchy these days. But if you want my advice, I'd wear a bikini under the baggy sweats, okay? Just in case it gets too hot out there, because it's going to be warm today.
Can we talk about you instead? Like, how the rest of your evening went?
There's not much to tell. We hit the bars, went to a party, just a typical Saturday night.
How's it going with Steve?
He's a little clingy, and I'm not sure I'm ready for something like that. But back to Colin again. He's seriously hot.
Yes, I noticed.
Did he try to kiss you goodbye?
No, and I didn't want him to.
That's good, she said. Keep playing hard to get. Guys like that.
Maria made a face and Serena giggled again.
Okay, I'll stop. I think it's great, though. You not only have a date, a real date, no matter how you describe it, but you're the one who asked him. You're the epitome of the modern woman. And just so you know, I am totally jealous that you're going to get to see him with his shirt off. I don't think he has an ounce of fat on him.
I really couldn't tell you. It was kind of dark and he was walking beside me.
I want pictures today. You always bring that camera with you anyway. Just sneak a few of him.
No.
I would think that you could do at least this one little thing for your baby sister, who also happens to be the one who set you up with him.
She thought about it.
Okay, maybe. Awesome! Or better yet, take some with your phone and send them to me, and I'll put them on Instagram. Not a chance. Are you sure? I'd hate to have to tell Dad you're going out with an ex-con who's currently on probation. Don't you dare. I was kidding. I don't even want to be in the same state when you drop that little bombshell. So warn me in advance, okay?
Will do.
Still, you should get a selfie with him at the very least, before the announcement. That way, you'll know you actually went out with him since it'll never happen again after that. Are you done?
Serena giggled.
Yes, now I'm done.
Maria noticed a hummingbird sipping from the feeder her mother had hung, hovering in a way that had mesmerized her since she was a young girl. From inside, she could hear her mother quietly singing to herself. And while the aroma of eggs and refried beans should have been making her hungry, she was already a little nervous about the upcoming afternoon. She wondered how much she'd actually be able to eat.
I'm still kind of surprised at the way he just told you everything, Serena finally offered.
Had you been there, you would have been in shock, trust me.
It's weird, though. I don't think I've ever met anyone like that before. You're telling me.
2 hours later, Maria was at home, debating what to wear. Serena's advice sounded in her ear, making the decision a lot more difficult than it should have been. Normally, she wouldn't think twice about it. She'd wear shorts and either a halter or a bikini top. And she certainly wouldn't have showered beforehand, or put on makeup, or felt the clawing pangs of nervousness in her belly. But there they were. Standing in front of her chest of drawers, she debated what kind of impression she wanted to make. Bold? Casual? Sexy? It was a whole lot easier for men, she decided. Throw on a t-shirt, flip-flops and shorts, and head out the door. Meanwhile, she had to debate the length of her shorts and decide how tight or faded she wanted them to be, or whether she should wear the ones with the sexy tears below the back pockets or go a bit more conservative. And that was just the bottoms. Trying to decide on her top was even more difficult, especially since she hadn't decided whether to wear the bikini or a one-piece underneath. Despite what she'd said to Serena, it was a date. And aside from the fiasco last weekend with Jill and Paul, she hadn't been on a lot of dates recently. Add in the fact that her thoughts had been drifting to Colin all morning and last night, and the whole thing left her feeling more jittery than ever. What did she want with him anyway? Colin was the kind of guy she used to prosecute. Until yesterday, had anyone even suggested that she go out with a guy with his past, she would have laughed aloud or, more likely, been offended. She should have simply said goodbye after he'd walked her to her car last night. The very idea of the two of them going out today was absurd, and yet, she had asked him. And she had trouble remembering exactly how that had happened or what she'd been thinking. And yet Colin was magnetic. It was the word that had popped into her head while she was taking a shower, and the more she'd thought about it, the more apt the description seemed. While his answers had left her spinning at times, she had to admit that his "here's the real me and you can either accept me or not" shtick was refreshing. More than that, she sensed that his regret had been real, underscoring how much he really had changed. She wasn't naive enough to ignore the possibility that he may have been trying to play on her sympathies, but it was impossible to reconcile that notion with the guy who changed her tire, or walked the beach with her, or attended classes with her sister in the hopes of becoming a teacher. He certainly hadn't tried to hit on her, and had she not asked him to go paddleboarding, she had no doubt he would have left her at her car without further ado. She had to admit that she appreciated the fact that he had been so open and honest about his past. If he'd waited until today to reveal those surprises, she would have felt manipulated and angry, maybe even frightened. The chemistry she'd initially felt with him would have been doused almost instantly, leaving her wondering what else he'd been lying about. No one likes a bait and switch. Truthfully, she didn't know a lot of people who turned their lives in an entirely new direction like Colin had. And though she had no idea where today might lead, or even whether it was a beginning of sorts, she finally thought, oh, what the hell, and put on her black bikini, then chose the sexy tight jean shorts with the tears below the pockets. Last, she pulled on a form-fitting shirt with a plunging neckline. Serena, after all, had been right about something else. If Colin took off his shirt, and that, she had to admit, wouldn't bother her in the slightest, then at the very least, she should have the option of doing the same. Colin was leaning against the side of his car as she pulled in behind him, and when he waved, all she could do was stare. He wore a gray t-shirt that clung from his sculpted shoulders all the way down to his narrow waist. The sleeves could barely contain his well-defined arms, and even from a distance, the deep blue-gray color of his eyes was visible, set off by his sharp cheekbones. As improbable as it seemed, her first thought was that he was getting more handsome by the day. When he pushed away from the car and smiled, she felt something jump inside her while a little voice whispered, "If I'm not careful, I could get in serious trouble with this guy." Forcing the thought away, she waved from inside the car, then took a deep breath as she shut the engine down. When she opened the door, the heat assailed her almost immediately. Thankfully, the humidity was minimal, and a slight breeze stirred the air, making it a bit more bearable. "Hey there," she called out. "You're right on time."
She saw that he had brought a backpack, a small cooler, and a pair of towels. He leaned over, picking up the backpack and flinging it over his shoulder.
"I got here early," he said. "I wasn't sure that I was parking in the right place. There aren't any other cars around."
"It's always quieter on the tip of the island," she said. "People don't like to feed the meters, which is good, since it means we don't have so far to walk." She shaded her eyes. "How did sparring go?"
"It was a little more intense than usual, but no bruising or broken noses."
"I can tell," she said with a smile. "How about the other guys? You didn't hurt them, did you?"
"They're fine." He squinted into the glare. "Your turn. How was brunch with your family?"
"No broken noses or bruising either," she teased. And when she heard him laugh, she tucked a strand of hair behind her ear, reminding herself not to get too carried away. "On a more serious note, though, I should probably warn you that I told Serena we were going out on the water today, in case she hunts you down after class and asks you for a lot of personal details."
"Will she do that?"
"For sure," Maria thought.
"Probably."
"Why doesn't she ask you?"
"I'm sure she'll be calling me later. She considers it her duty to be heavily involved in my personal life."
"Okay," he grinned. "You look beautiful, by the way."
She felt a flash of heat in her cheeks. "Thank you," she said.
Then, trying to keep things light, she added,
"You ready for today?"
"I can't wait."
"We're lucky there isn't a lot of wind. The water should be perfect."
She began to unhook one of the straps that held the paddleboards in place on the roof rack. Noting what she was doing, he stepped close to help her unhook the other straps. The muscles in his forearms moved like piano strings, making his tattoo ripple as the two of them worked side by side. He smelled like salt and wind, clean and fresh. He lifted the top board off, leaning it against the car before doing the same with the other, propping the two against each other.
"How's your balance on the board?" he asked.
"Pretty good. Why?"
"Because I packed a small cooler," he said, gesturing at it behind him. "I was wondering if you'd be able to put it on your board. I'm not sure my balance will be good enough at first."
"It's not that hard," she said. "You'll get the hang of it. But to answer your question, yes, I can put the cooler on my board, and actually that's perfect, since it will give me a place to put the towels. I hate wet towels."
Opening her door, she reached for both her camera and the carrier straps for the boards, consciously trying not to stare at him. She laid out the carrier straps, then hooked them to the boards, knowing Colin was watching her and liking the way it made her feel. When she finished, he grabbed his backpack and both boards. Maria picked up the towels and cooler as they started toward the point.
"What's in the cooler, by the way?"
she asked.
"Snacks, basically. Fruit, some nuts, a couple bottles of water."
"Healthy," she commented.
"I'm pretty strict about what I eat."
"And the backpack?"
"A frisbee, a hacky sack, and sunscreen if we hit the beach or whatever."
"I'm not very good at frisbee. And just so you know, I've never touched a hacky sack in my life."
"Then we'll both be trying something new today."
On the beach, the sand glowed almost white in the sunlight. Aside from a man tossing a ball to his golden retriever in the waves, the beach at this end of the island was deserted. Maria raised the cooler in the direction of the inlet.
"That's Masonboro Island," she said.
"Until you mentioned it last night, I'd never heard of it."
"It's rustic. There are no roads or picnic areas. In the summers, a lot of boaters go there, but lately, I've had the place to myself. It's quiet and beautiful, and it's a great way to kick off my week, especially one like this one. My partner has a trial later this week, and I'll probably be working late every night to make sure he has everything he needs. I'll head in earlier than usual, too."
"That's a lot of hours."
"Gotta get ahead, you know," she cracked.
"Why?"
"If I don't do my job, I'll get fired."
"I wasn't asking about doing your job well. I understand that. I was just wondering why it's important to you to get ahead."
Maria frowned, realizing that he was the first person who'd ever asked her the question, and she was at a loss.
"I don't know," she finally answered. "I guess I'm just wired that way. Either that, or it was all my parents' fault. Isn't that what people say in therapy?"
"Sometimes, and sometimes it's even true."
"Don't you want to get ahead?"
"I'm not sure what getting ahead even means," he said. "Bigger house, better cars, more exotic vacations. My parents have all those things, but I don't get the sense that either of them is really happy." There's always something more out there, but where does it end? I don't want to live like that.
How do you want to live?
I want balance. Work is important because I have to support myself, but so are friends, health, rest. Having the time to do things that I enjoy, and sometimes doing nothing at all.
The cooler thumped gently against her leg. That's very sensible.
Okay. She smiled. I could have predicted he was going to say that.
You're right, of course. Balance is important, but I've always liked the feeling of succeeding at something difficult, whether it was grades when I was a little girl or a well-written brief now. Setting goals and then reaching them makes me feel like I'm not just going through the motions of life. And in the end, if I do it well enough, other people notice and I get rewarded. I like that too.
That makes sense.
But not for you.
We're different.
Don't you set goals too, like finishing college or winning a fight?
Yes.
Then how are we different?
Because I don't care about getting ahead, and I generally don't give a lot of thought to the way other people define it.
And do you think I do?
Yes.
Care to elaborate?
He took a couple of steps before answering. I think you care deeply about the way you come across to other people. But to me, that's a mistake. In the end, the only one you can ever really please is yourself. How others feel is up to them.
She pressed her lips together, knowing he was right, but still a little taken aback that he'd simply say it. Then again, he was forthright about everything else, so why should she be surprised? Did you learn that in therapy?
Yes, but it took a long time to embrace it.
Maybe I should talk to your therapist.
Maybe, he agreed, and she laughed.
Well, just so you know, it's not all me. The fact that I need so much external validation is my parents' fault.
When he arched a skeptical eyebrow, she nudged his shoulder playfully, the gesture strangely natural.
I'm being serious about this. I might have been born with drive or ambition or whatever you want to call it, but they definitely nurtured it. Neither one of my parents went to school past the 8th grade, and they had to sacrifice for years before they could start the restaurant. They had to learn a new language and accounting and 1,000 other things from scratch when they were adults. So to them, a good education was everything. I grew up speaking Spanish at home, so right from the start, I had to work harder than the other kids because I didn't understand anything the teacher was saying. Even though my parents were both working 15-hour days, they never missed a meeting with my teachers, and they made sure I always did my homework. When I started to bring home good grades, they were just so proud. They'd invite my aunts and uncles and cousins over on the weekend. I've got a ton of relatives in town. And they'd pass around my report card going on and on about what a good student I was. I was the center of attention, and I liked the way it made me feel. So I began to work even harder. I'd sit in the front row and raise my hand whenever a teacher asked a question. And I'd stay up until the middle of the night studying for tests. As a result, I was pretty much a total nerd all the way through high school.
Yeah? He wore that amused expression again.
Yeah, she said sheepishly. I got glasses when I was 8, these brown-rimmed monstrosities, and I had braces for 3 years. I was shy and gawky, and I actually liked to study. I didn't go to a prom until I was a senior, and even then, I went with a group of other girls who didn't have dates either. I never kissed a boy until the month before I started college. Trust me, I know what a nerd is, and I was one of them.
And now?
I'm still kind of a nerd. I work too much, I don't visit my friends as often as I should, and I don't really do anything on the weekends except paddleboard and spend time with my family. On Friday nights, you can usually find me reading in bed.
That doesn't make you a nerd. I don't go out much anymore either. If I'm not working out or competing, I'm usually listening to some tunes, or studying, or hanging with Evan and Lily at the house.
Lily?
Evan's fiancée.
What's she like?
Blonde, about the same size as you, terrific personality, and very, very Southern. She's from Charleston.
How about Evan? Is he anything like you?
He's more like you, actually. He's got his act together.
You think I have my act together?
Yes.
Then why doesn't it feel that way?
I have no idea, he answered. But I think most people would say the same thing about you as I did.
She squinted over at him, liking what he'd said. By then, they had reached the shoreline, and she slipped off her sandals, focusing on the water.
Okay, this is good, she declared. The tide's going in, which makes it easier. If it were going out, we'd have to launch from down there, she said, pointing over his shoulder. You ready?
Almost, he said. He put the boards down and shrugged off the backpack, storing his flip-flops and removing a bottle of sunscreen. He pulled off his shirt, tucking it away in the backpack as well, and her first thought was that he looked almost sculpted. His chest and stomach were a landscape of contours and ridges, every muscle sharply defined. On his chest, a colorful dragon tattoo wound its way over one shoulder, intertwining artfully with a Chinese character. He stared toward the water as he began to apply the lotion.
It's gorgeous out here, he observed.
I agree,
she said, trying not to ogle. He squeezed some more sunscreen into his hand before offering her the bottle.
Do you want some?
Maybe later. I put some on earlier, but I don't generally burn. Latin skin, you know.
He nodded, slathering some on the fronts of his legs and then turning around.
Would you mind putting some on my back?
She nodded, her mouth going slightly dry.
Sure.
Their fingers brushed as she took the lotion. She squeezed a dab into her hands and slowly ran her hands over his back, feeling the interplay of muscles and skin, trying to ignore the strange intimacy of what she was doing. Serena was going to love hearing about this.
Will we see any dolphins or porpoises?
He asked, seemingly oblivious to her thoughts. Running her hands over the cords in his back, it took her a moment to answer.
I doubt it. At this time of the day, they're usually on the ocean side.
Then, feeling a pang of disappointment, she finished and closed the cap.
All right, you're done.
Thanks, he said, putting the sunscreen away. What's next?
We're almost ready.
She unhooked the carrier straps and handed them to Colin to store in his backpack as she grabbed the smaller of the two boards.
Can you follow me out with the cooler and the towels? I'll show you how to get up.
She waded into the ocean with her board, and when she was a bit more than knee-deep, she lay down on it, pulling herself along its length until she was centered. She set the oar perpendicular to the board, then held it fast as she first went to her knees and then finally stood.
Ta-da! And that's all there is to it.
The key is to find your sweet spot, where neither the nose nor the tail is underwater. And then, keep your knees bent. It'll help keep you upright.
Got it.
You can put the cooler behind me and then stack the towels on. And would you hand me my camera?
He waded into the water, following her instructions. She draped the camera strap around her neck as he retrieved his own board and repeated her movements. When he was standing, he shifted his weight, the board wobbling slightly.
It's more stable than I thought it would be, he remarked.
Now, when you turn, you can either paddle forward for a wide, slow turn, or you can paddle backward for a tighter turn.
She demonstrated the first, then the second, rotating in place, moving a bit farther from shore in the process.
You ready?
Let's go, he said.
Within a few strokes, he'd caught up to her, and they began to paddle side by side until they reached the fertile, still waters of the marsh. Above them, the blue sky was limned with thin cirrus clouds. Discreetly, she watched Colin taking in everything, his gaze lingering on the brown pelicans and the snowy egrets, or an osprey that passed overhead. He didn't seem to feel the need to break the silence, and she thought again that she'd never met anyone like him. As her thoughts continued to drift, she turned her attention to the island, noting the gnarled remnants of tree stumps, gray and salt-coated, their roots twisting like frayed yarn on a loosely twined ball. Curving pathways cut through the sawgrass-speckled dunes, shortcuts to the ocean side of the island, and driftwood, stained black from the marsh, collected at the water's edge.
You're thinking about something, she heard him say.
Without her noticing it, Colin had moved his board closer to hers.
Just how much I love being out here.
Do you come out here every weekend?
Most weekends, she said, keeping her strokes steady. Unless it's raining or the wind is gusting. Strong winds make it feel like you're not getting anywhere, and the water can get kind of choppy. I made that mistake once when I brought Serena out here. She lasted about 20 minutes before she insisted on heading back, and she hasn't come out ever since. When it comes to the ocean, she's more of a lay out in the sun or relax in the back of the boat type of girl.
even though we're close, we're not that much alike.
The curiosity in the way he watched and listened urged her on, and Maria drew her paddle through the water.
Serena has always been more outgoing and popular than I ever was. She's had one boyfriend after the next and has a zillion friends. Her phone never stops ringing. People always want to spend time with her. It wasn't like that for me. I was always quieter, shyer, I guess, and I grew up feeling like I never really fit in.
You don't seem shy to me.
No? She asked. How do I seem to you?
He cocked his head. Thoughtful, intelligent, empathetic, beautiful. The certainty with which he spoke, like he'd reviewed the list beforehand, made her feel suddenly self-conscious.
Thank you, she murmured. That was sweet.
I'm sure you've heard it before.
Not really.
Then you're hanging out with the wrong people.
She adjusted her feet on the board, trying to mask how flattered and flustered she felt.
So, no girlfriend for you?
No, he answered. I wasn't really boyfriend material for a while there, and lately I've been pretty busy.
You?
Still single, she said. I had a serious boyfriend when I was in college, but it didn't work out. And lately I've had a tendency to attract the wrong kind of men.
Like me?
She gave a sheepish grin.
I wasn't thinking of you when I said that. I was thinking about the managing partner at my firm, who happens to be married and has a family. He's been hitting on me, and it's been making work pretty stressful.
I can imagine.
But you don't have any advice for me, right? Since you don't give advice?
No.
You do realize that having a conversation with you takes some getting used to, right? Serena, for instance, always has loads of advice.
Is it helpful?
Not really.
His expression said she'd just proved his point.
What happened with your boyfriend?
There's not much to say. We'd been going out for a couple of years, and it felt to me like we were moving towards something more serious.
Marriage?
She nodded.
I thought so. But then he decided that I wasn't what he wanted. He wanted someone else.
That had to be rough.
At the time, it was devastating, she agreed.
And no boyfriends since then?
Not really. I've dated a few guys, but nothing ever really materialized.
She paused, remembering.
I'd go dancing with my girlfriends at this salsa club in Charlotte, but most of the guys I ended up meeting wanted only one thing. To me, sleeping with someone is an outgrowth of a commitment. And a lot of guys just want a fling or whatever.
That's their problem.
I know, but
she tried to think of the best way to phrase it.
It's hard, sometimes. Maybe it's because my parents are so happy and make it seem so easy, but I've always assumed that I'd be able to find the perfect guy without having to settle. And growing up, I've had all these plans. I just knew that by now, at my age, I'd be married and we'd live in a restored Victorian and we'd be talking about kids. But those things seem further away now than they did when I was a little girl. They seem further away than they did even a couple of years ago.
When he didn't respond, she shook her head.
I can't believe I'm telling you all this.
I'm interested.
Sure you are, she said, dismissing his comment. It sounds boring even to me.
It's not boring, he countered. It's your story, and I like hearing it.
He let that sit before abruptly changing the subject.
Salsa dancing, huh?
That's what you heard in everything I said?
When he shrugged, she went on, wondering why it seemed so easy to talk to him.
I used to go almost every weekend.
But you don't go anymore?
Not since I've moved back. They don't have any clubs here. Not officially, anyway. Serena tried to drag me to this one place, and I thought about it, but I begged off at the last minute.
It sounds like it might have been fun.
Maybe. But it's not even a real club. It's in this abandoned warehouse, and I'm pretty sure the whole setup is illegal.
Sometimes those are the best places to go.
I assume you're speaking from experience?
Yes.
She smiled.
Do you know anything about salsa dancing?
Is it like the tango?
Not really. The tango is kind of like ballroom dancing where you move around the room. Salsa dancing is more of a party dance with lots of spinning and changing hands, and you stay in one place on the floor. It's a great way to spend a couple of hours with friends, especially if your partner is good. It was the only time I felt like I could really let go and be myself.
Aren't you being yourself right now?
Of course, she answered. But this is definitely the quieter version of me, the more typical one.
She raised the oar overhead to stretch for a moment, then dipped the tip into the water again.
I have a question, she said, and I've been wondering about it since you mentioned it.
When he turned toward her, she went on.
Why do you want to teach the third grade? I'd think that most guys would want to teach at the high school level.
He pulled his oar through the water. Because at that age, kids are old enough to understand most everything an adult tells them, but still young enough to believe that adults tell the truth. It's also the year when behavior problems began to really manifest. Taken together with all the testing the state requires, third grade is just a critical year. They glided on water almost as still as glass.
And?
She asked. And what?
You said the same thing to me last night, when you thought I wasn't telling you the whole story. So, I'll ask you again. What's the real reason you want to teach third grade?
Because it was my last good year in school, he said. Until a couple of years ago, in fact, it was my last good year, period. And it was all because of Mr. Morris. He was a retired army officer who got into teaching later in life, and he knew exactly what I needed. Not the mindless discipline I had later in military school, but a specific plan just for me. He didn't take any crap in class from the very beginning, and as soon as I began acting up, he told me I'd have to stay after school. I thought I'd just sit in the classroom with a book, or he'd have me clean up or whatever. But instead, he had me run laps around the lower school and do push-ups every time I passed him. And the whole time, he kept telling me that I was doing great, that I was really fast or strong or whatever. So it didn't feel like punishment. He did the same thing at recess the next day, and then he asked if I could start showing up early every day because it was clear that I had a gift for running, that I was stronger than the other kids, better than the other kids. Looking back, I know he was doing it because of my ADHD and other emotional crap, and that all he really wanted to do was burn off my excess energy so that I could sit still in class. His voice grew softer as he went on. But back then, it was the first time I could ever remember being praised. And after that, all I wanted to do was make him even more proud of me. I buckled down and school started getting easier for me. I caught up in reading and math, and I was better behaved at home, too. Fast forward a year to Mrs. Crandall's class, and all that went right out the window. She was mean and angry, and she hated boys, and I went back to being the troubled kid I used to be. After that, my parents shipped me off, and you already know the rest of the story. He let out a long breath before facing her. That's why I want to teach the third grade. Because maybe, just maybe, I'll come across a kid like me, and I'll know exactly what to do. And in the long run, I know how much that single year might mean to that kid. Because without Mr. Morris so long ago, I would never have considered going back to college now and becoming a teacher. While Colin spoke, Maria kept her gaze fixed on him.
I know I shouldn't be surprised, considering everything else you've told me, she said. But I am.
Because?
It's inspiring. Why you want to become a teacher, I mean. I don't have any stories like that. Half the time, I'm not even sure why I became a lawyer in the first place. It just kind of happened.
How so?
When I first got to college, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I thought about business school or getting a master's, and I even debated whether or not to go to medical school. It was hard enough just to pick a major, and even in my junior year, I still had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. My roommate, on the other hand, was set on going to law school, and I sort of convinced myself that the idea was a lot more glamorous than it really is. The next thing I knew, I was applying to law school, and 3 years later, I had a job lined up with the DA and I was studying for the bar. And now, here I am. Don't get me wrong, I'm good at what I do. But sometimes it's hard for me to imagine that I'll be doing it the rest of my life.
Who says you have to?
I can't just throw my education away. For the past 4 years, what would I do?
He scratched his jaw. I think, he finally said, you can do whatever you want. In the end, we all live the life we choose for ourselves.
What do your parents think about you being back in school? I think they're still wondering whether I've really changed or whether I'll revert to being the guy I used to be.
She smiled, liking that he said what he thought without worrying what she might think.
I don't know why, but it's hard for me to imagine the other Colin, the one you used to be.
You wouldn't have liked him much.
Probably not, she said. And he probably wouldn't have stopped to change my tire either.
Definitely not, he agreed.
What else should I know about the new Colin? She asked,
and her question gradually gave way to a meandering conversation about growing up in Raleigh, and a bit more about his friendship with Evan and Lily. He told her about his parents and his older sisters and what it had been like to grow up under the care of various nannies. He talked about the early fights he'd been in, the schools he'd attended, and offered more details about the years following high school, although he admitted that they'd largely blurred together. He talked about MMA, and when pressed, he recounted a few of his fights, including the most recent one with the Marine, which had left him bruised and bloody. While many of the stories he told her underscored the rough edges of his past, they were of a piece with what she already knew. As they talked, the tide began to roll in, propelling them forward side by side. The sun gradually bowed toward the horizon, the water beginning to gleam like old pennies. The thin cloud cover softened the glare and began to change colors, pinks and oranges and magentas.
Would you like to check out the beach? She finally asked.
He nodded, and as they began paddling toward shore, Maria spotted the sleek, dark backs of three porpoises slowly approaching. They arced through the water, and when she pointed them out, Colin broke into a boyish grin. In unspoken agreement, they stopped paddling, allowing their boards to drift. To her surprise, the porpoises altered their course, gliding directly toward them. On instinct, Maria reached for the camera and began to snap photos, adjusting the framing with every shot. By some miracle, she captured an image of all three of the porpoises breaching the surface before they paraded past in single file, close enough to touch, their blowholes spraying water. Maria turned, watching them retreat toward the inlet and the ocean beyond, wondering what had brought them to this place in this exact moment. When they finally vanished from sight, she noticed that Colin had been staring at her. He smiled, and on instinct she raised the camera and snapped his picture, suddenly recalling the flash of vulnerability he'd shown a few minutes earlier. Despite the outward confidence he exuded, she understood that, like her, Colin simply wanted to be accepted. In his own way, he was just as lonely as she was. The realization made her ache, and it suddenly felt like they were the only two people in the world. In this silent, intimate moment, she knew that she wanted to spend more afternoons with him just like this one. An ordinary afternoon that somehow felt magical.
Chapter 7. Colin. On the beach, Colin sat on a towel with Maria beside him, trying to ignore the way she looked in the black bikini that had been hidden beneath her clothing. Yesterday, he'd viewed her as an intriguing stranger. While paddleboarding today, he'd come to view her as a friend. But now, he wasn't sure what might come next. All he really knew was that the black bikini was making it difficult to keep his thoughts straight. Maria, he decided, was beyond pretty, planted firmly in the stunning range. And although Colin sensed that something had changed between them over the course of the day, he couldn't quite put a name to it. He didn't have much experience with women like Maria. Instead of college degrees and close-knit families, the women he dated tended to have numerous piercings and tattoos, angry facades, and serious daddy issues. They expected to be treated poorly, and he generally obliged. The mutual lack of expectation made for something resembling comfort when they hung out together. Damaged comfort for sure, but misery loves company. Only a couple of them had lasted as long as 3 months, but unlike Evan, having one special person in his life had never held much interest for Colin. He wasn't wired that way. He liked the freedom that came with being single, without having to answer to someone else. It was hard enough to keep his own life straight, let alone trying to meet someone else's expectations. Or, at least, that was what he'd always believed. But now, as he surreptitiously admired Maria, he wondered whether he'd simply been making excuses. Whether maybe, just maybe,
he hadn't cared about being in a relationship because he'd never given it an honest shot, or because he hadn't met the right person. He knew he was getting ahead of himself, but he couldn't deny the fact that he wanted to spend more time with her. Why she was still single was beyond him. He reminded himself that there wasn't a chance she'd be interested in a guy like him. And yet? In the hospital, he'd spent a lot of time in group therapy where trying to figure out what made others tick was part and parcel of the exercise itself. Understanding others meant understanding yourself and vice versa, and he'd long ago become attuned to body language and vocal cues people displayed as they shared their fears and flaws and regrets. And while he couldn't precisely read Maria, he suspected she was just as confused about what was happening as he was. Which made sense. Although he was doing okay now, she had to realize that the old Colin would always be part of him. That would be a concern for anyone. Hell, he was concerned about it too. While his explosive anger was dormant at the present time, it was like a hibernating bear, and he knew he had to structure his life a certain way to keep spring from arriving so the bear would stay asleep. Train hard to keep his anger in check. Indulge in the occasional MMA match to purge his aggression. Study hard and work long hours to fill his schedule and keep him from visiting the wrong places. Stay away from drugs and limit alcohol. Spend time with Evan and Lily, who not only were model citizens, but were always there to lend support and keep him out of harm's way. There wasn't room in his life for Maria. There wasn't time. He didn't have the energy. And yet, they were alone together on an isolated stretch of sand, and he thought again that she was sexy as hell. Logically, Maria should have run for the hills by now, but she seemed to be taking his past in stride, and for the life of him, he couldn't stop thinking about her. He watched as she leaned back in the glow of the late afternoon sun, propping herself on her elbows. He thought again that she was as naturally beautiful as anyone he'd ever seen, and in an effort to distract himself, he rolled to the side and reached behind her, pulling the cooler toward him. He popped off the lid and retrieved two bottles of water, then handed one of them to her.
"Banana or orange?" he asked.
"Banana," she said. She sat up, languid and graceful. "Oranges get my hands all sticky." He handed it over and pulled out a couple of baggies of mixed nuts.
"Do you want some of these too?"
"Sure," she said. "Why not?" She took the baggie and popped a couple of almonds into her mouth. "This is just what I needed," she said with a wink. "I can already feel my cholesterol dropping and my muscles getting bigger." He smiled, beginning to peel his orange. She did the same with her banana and took a bite before leaning back again. "I never do this," she said. "Come to the beach when I'm here. I mean, I've paddled past it, but I've never actually come out here just to relax."
"Why not?"
"In the summer, there are always too many people around. I'd feel weird coming out here alone."
"Why? It wouldn't bother me."
"I have no doubt you'd do it. For you, it's no big deal. But it's different for women. Coming out here all alone, some guys might think it's an invitation. And what if some crazy man sat next to me and started hitting on me? Like someone who'd done drugs and was on probation and had a history of going to bars so he could fight strangers and stomp on people's heads?" "Oh, wait!" She fell.